Hello, and welcome to episode 105 of Fully Boosted, a War Machine and Hordes podcast. I'm Pete.
I'm Brad.
Oh, God, you guys messed it up.
Which one's Brad?
Hold on.
I'm Brad.
I'm Matt.
No, we're starting again.
And I'm Spartacus.
Three, two, one. Hello, and welcome to episode 105 of Fully Boosted, a War Machine and Hordes podcast. I'm Pete.
I'm Brad.
I'm Matt.
And joining us tonight, or today, whatever, whenever you listen to it, is our new best friend, at least for the Fully Boosted crew, Mr. Josh Bates.
Hi. Hi.
So, the reason... Yeah. Well, so he's a new friend to me and Brad, but not to Matt. Matt, Josh was your WTC captain for last year?
Yeah, so last year Josh was my captain, as Pete said, but he was also very responsible for a lot of my growth as a player. Going into the WTC process last year, I felt really challenged to not only rise to the expectation of me as a player, but also to like perform, right? And instead of feeling like I was competing against other people, Josh made me feel like I was part of a team and also was there to help support me, not only with like advice, coaching, all that stuff, but, you know, provided me support where I need it. It was a really pleasant experience and I owe a lot of my joy last year to him.
Awesome. So one of the main reasons we're having Josh on is we want to celebrate his victory at Winter's Wrath. So that was a Warfare weekend, War Machine and Hordes Invitational Qualifying event. Josh, you took that down with technical aplomb. So congratulations for being the fourth person to qualify this year for Warfare weekend. Could you tell us about the event?
Yeah, it was
for those
super
that
fun.
Don't know.
So it was in Oshawa, Ontario. It actually pulled out a really good turnout for the Oshawa area. It was roughly 30 players. We were approaching five rounds until a pair round. So lots and lots of War Machine for a day. Single day, no second day. Although I'm sure that could change with enough, crowd appeal. Legion Hall, which is one of my favorite places to play these sorts of games because the bar opens early and it's cheap and it's fun. Lots of tables, lots of room. The vendor was good. Prizes were fun. Really well coordinated. It's cool. Yeah, it was really fun. The little plaques and all that stuff for Warfare Weekend are really fun. Those are my favorite things to win from events other than invitations to other War Machine tournaments.
Yeah, they're really killing it with those. I've seen several of them. Yeah, they look really cool.
It's cool. It's like it's a nice way to present this game, right? Like it's I really like winning those sorts of things over other stuff. It's kind of eternal, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, at the event, it looks like you were a Scorn boy. Now, you played Scorn at WTC last year, right?
I did, yes.
Okay, so you're not a bandwagger, hopper, because you are playing Makeda 3 in Imperial Warhost and Zal 2 on Exalted. So what was your thoughts with this pair?
I like my boys thick, so I'm always going to have an Imperial Warhost list at some point. I feel a good symbiosis with those heavy lists. So Makeda 3 felt like a really natural selection for me. And Immortals pairs really, really well with it. As a reflection of the existing meta as well, Immortals has a really firm matchup into the majority of Circle. And Makeda as a generalist, as well as something that's decent into the mirror, although not specifically geared towards it. Gives you a really good coverage of what you can expect to see. So I felt really
gotcha. So sort of thing. So not to trivialize, but this is the this is basically Scorn, right? This is what people should be playing for the most part.
Should be playing is a strong choice of words. So
okay.
I think there is some obvious power level both in Immortals and in Makeda. I think one of my favorite things about I would almost argue it is not the right thing to play. That the reason being that if the two most important parts of the meta right now are Circle and Scorn, as a Scorn player, winning the mirror, beating basically the pairing I played, is half of what's most important, right? So if that's true, you're probably leaning towards more like offbeat lists and that sort of thing. So the Morgul 2 Immortals, for example, is really good in other Immortals lists. Makeda 3 Immortals is better into my pairing than what I brought. Zal 2 Immortals is really good.
Or, sorry. I definitely want to talk about your Zal 2 list, though. Sure. That battle group, it's kind of spicy.
It's the one true battle group for Zal 2.
All right, so what was your battle group?
My battle group, you might want to get a pen. This is a hard one to remember, is a mammoth. And I'm done.
Thick boy mammoth.
Feels so good. The mammoth is ridiculous in that list. So something I think a lot of people miss is that, or at least maybe undersell the value of, is that Zal 2 has mage sight. So that mammoth hits the things he wants to hit. It's a huge table bully. It occupies an enormous amount of space by existing. That slam gun, or sorry, throw gun, even worse, does so much work from the center of the table. And specifically into things like circle, for example. Circle players really like defending their Tharn with stalkers, which don't like being thrown back to their deployment zones. So stuff like that's really fun. It's really hard to hide call in a forest if the forest has a mage sight and a missile in it. Stuff like that is really, really, really valuable. So it's just like a huge tool, a huge bully. Really, really skews a lot of the things that people want to bring against Immortals out of their favor. I love it. I can't go back to other groups.
So when I was doing my initial testing in Scorn, I settled on Zal 2 with a mammoth. We've discussed this. And I remember the feeling when your opponent puts like Getarix somewhere relevant to the game, and you're like, yeah, so I guess my mammoth just makes Getarix irrelevant to the game for the next three turns.
That's correct.
And they just like look at the table and feel like their whole battle plan crumbling. And maybe you just throw Getarix into the objective and almost one-shot him. Like, all of those things are fine.
I like it when Wyrmwood looks at its feet and then sheds a single tear because the card feels blank.
good times, right?
I like that one a lot. I like when you run your mammoth and then Wyrmwood is like, I'm going to stranglehold the mammoth forever. And you're like, go ahead. He still controls the entire board.
Yeah, so with that said, like obviously you're talking about Zal 2 and Makeda 3. But what was on your short list of other casters to play?
My short list is, we're still early in the season, and I'm of the opinion that every game before WTC is a practice game for WTC. So I'm still pretty bold on my caster roster at the moment. I really like Makeda 3. I really like Zadesh 2 in a couple of different pairings. Mortal 2 is a big favorite of mine, and I think he's very good in the mirror. This could be one of the best times to play Reshef. The Reshef triple battle engine list is a crazy powerful list. I feel like Hexorus 2 could have some game. Like, there's some interesting tools there. But a lot of things. But for this event in particular, I was deciding between either Makeda or Zadesh in Imperial Warhost, or Zal, as well as Zal and Mortal 2 for Immortals.
And speaking about Winter's Wrath, I do have to make an editorial comment. I'm a dumbass. It is only a wild card of points qualifier. It is not a full qualifier event. So sorry to have misled anyone on that. Yeah, Josh, I hate to break it to you. You are not qualified yet. You got to keep grinding.
What?
Yeah.
No takesies, backsies, dude.
Yeah, sorry. Well, you know what? Gonzo did ask us to interview, so maybe we can get it changed.
Perfect. Yeah, let's make that happen.
Yep.
I'll have my people call your people.
With that said, last year, you were a big proponent of the Morgul 2 dumpster fire list.
God, that list is such a dumpster fire, and everyone can joke on it. That is a Brandon McWhirter list. Or sorry, a Brandon McWhirter list. Dustin. Can't even get his name right. Yeah, that is a Dustin list. Everyone credits me with making it. I believe it was you and Dustin, actually, and it's really funny that everyone wants to credit me with me. I just piloted it, man. That list is amazing, by the way.
So when you're picking your pairings for events and stuff like this, and you're testing things, how do you go from the practice process to the selection process? Like, obviously, going into this event, you had to choose between those four casters that were on your list. That you mentioned previously, but like, what testing did you do to come to your conclusion?
Oh, cool. Okay, that's a good question. A lot of my testing leading up to this event was deciding, again, if every, just from my perspective of things, every game prior to the WTC is a practice game for the WTC. So a lot of my practice was deciding at that time what casters did I think were potentially the most viable and what casters would justify the most practice within the next 6 months. So I think right now within the faction of Scorn, as I think most people think, some of the biggest standout casters in terms of raw potential are Makeda 3, because she does a bunch of bonker stuff, and Zol 2, because of how persistent a question he asks. And I think that's basically where I was on that. I think Mortal 2 has a lot of really interesting counter meta potential, and Zadesh is something I have hundreds of games into. So I think I stood the most to gain from playing the high potential casters. And getting the reps with them in a competitive environment.
That makes a lot of sense to me. So you're at the event. It's day one. You're looking across all the armies on the table. Do you feel like your meta read was spot on? Like you just 100% locked it in?
No, because there were 1,000 Storm Raptors. How are there 1,000 Storm Raptors?
Really, a ton of Storm Raptors.
So PP had those the mystery boxes that they were selling, and everyone got Storm Raptors and then flooded the secondhand market. And then the CID dropped, and everyone bought those Storm Raptors.
Money making. So an interesting in-game point of the Storm Raptor is they are really good into Immortals, which I think is something that a lot of Circle players are trying to resolve right now is the Immortals matchup. So something like, for example, Baldur 2 Immortals that has a rock wall to control where those birds can be attacked from, as well as the big stupid thunderhead fart that the birds like to kill everything with. Geomancy's crevasses for RFP. Like, there's a lot of really interesting tools that bring a lot to the matchups that that faction are trying to solve should they be trying to solve Iona's issues. So Marc-Andre LeBlanc of Team 2 is kind of, I think, the originator of the principal idea of that list. It's something he'd been talking to our team about a lot, and it's super compelling to me. And it was interesting to see it finally on the table. But from like a nerd perspective, like how much I enjoyed this, there was a point during a game that beside the table, it was just like 4 or 5 Storm Raptors in like a flock, and it was awesome. So often you get to see that cool model just all collected together like that, right? It was really fun. I played against double Storm Raptors twice in this event, in fact.
Both piloted by Baldur 2?
No, the first was Bird Lady, whose name I'm missing. Una.
Una. Interesting. So I know that Baby Michael and Mark worked on a double Raptor list with Baldur 2, I believe, initially.
I love that list.
I saw him play to Captain Con. It was pretty intimidating. With the double Storm Raptor being a thing that, as a Scorn player, you have to be aware of, how did you handle it? Did you just drop Imperial Warhost?
The first round was against a player named Chatty. I love playing against this guy. He's a really fun opponent. He has the wherewithal to play really complicated decision trees without always having time to practice. He's a young family, and he does all this other stuff, but he's a really competitive player, and it's always really great when he gets the chance to come out, and especially so when you get to be his opponent. He's a great one. In that particular instance, I brought out Imperial Warhost. The issue for me in that situation as a Scorn player is if my pairing is Imperial Warhost and Mortals, and your pairing is Double Raptors and Iona, I'm really scared to drop Imperial Warhost. Because, like, if a Ravager looks at a turtle the wrong way, it dies. Like, I have to be really careful about where my limited number of attacking models go. So the first round against Chatty, where him being the big boy that he is, he had double Raptor as one list and double Woldwrath as the other. I was like, I could probably get away with Imperial Warhost here, and was able to drop that one. But against Mark, I got scared onto Immortals into double Raptors, which I think is exactly what he wanted. Still a game, still really cool, really hard to play around it, but it was fun to get that game in. And you still, as the Scorn player, have tools. You just have to hope your Ancestral Guardian do a lot.
So, Josh, for that player chatty, you mentioned that he doesn't get a lot of practice time. For somebody like yourself who, crushes an event without blinking an eye, double qualified for or gets picked up for WTC, what's your practice schedule like?
I try and play – it's been a little varied recently, but I try and play roughly 5 games a week outside of tournaments. That's not always possible. Sometimes it's less, usually less than more. But 5 feels like the golden standard. I'm of the opinion that it is equally important to be a participating member in your community and talk to other players about how their games went and what their mentality is going into matchups and discuss their preparation as it is for you yourself to play games. Coming to understand why your opponent makes the decisions he does or the way he moves pieces is as important as your decisions or the way that you move it. So I think for me, when I got involved with the WTC community, the thing that made me develop as much as I did through that, because I was tenfold after my first year, was getting involved in the community and talking to a lot of players who love this game and want to talk about it and want to be challenged and want to challenge you. And really just diving in. And I think that's something that's available to anybody who's interested. I don't think you need a jersey for that.
So that's an interesting point, and that being part of the larger WTC community kind of opened your eyes to how important your local community is as well.
Totally.
That was similar to my experience as well, where once I put on that jersey, I understood a little bit more about being a member of something bigger than not only something that isn't only about me, right?
Yeah.
And that, like, for me to benefit from things, I also have to do things that are in the interest of other people.
Totally. Yeah, we're all in this together. And, like, this is a demonetized game. We're not playing for thousands of dollars. We don't, like, win plane tickets on our own by crushing other people and that sort of thing. The nature of this game is that we're all just trying to play dolls really well together. And you get a lot better when you let other people help you and when you engage in helping other people.
Yeah, sorry. yeah, I agree completely. It's the engagement of the community is a really big thing. With that said, when you're at an event and you're playing against people, when you get to the table, do you have anything you like to say to opponents before games? Anything you like to clarify, or do you just get right into the game?
Oh, I usually try and humanize myself a little bit. I want to make it clear when I get to a table that the game we're about to play is going to be fun. That, like, it's going to be clean and fun and easy for us to both enjoy. And as long as we're clearly expressing our intentions throughout the game, that we're not going to have any, like, weird issues and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, it. Again, if every game you play, and I'm just going to keep referencing this rhetoric, but if every game you play is a practice game, then you never lose, right? Like, you either win or you learn. And the better you get along with your opponent, and the cleaner you are with your opponent, and the more transparent you are with your opponent, the more opportunity you have for that. So I usually just try and establish that that's where I am and what I'm hoping to see from them.
Yeah, so I kind of give a speech at the start of every game where I talk about how, like, we're here to have fun and play with toys. Mm-hmm. And if we ever get low on clock, that I have no problem putting it on my time for anything I ask about, anything that is referring to my models, and I'm not going to expect them to do the same, but I would enjoy it if they would.
Sure.
And that it's important that as players we understand that it's a game we're playing and that there's nothing really on the line here.
Yeah, no bragging rights when my elephant beats up your dog. Like, that's where that ends, right? Like, it's nothing at all. I think to, like, as a reflection of your clock pass or whatever, I always try and make it clear that as long as, again, if you show me your thing and go, this is my intention, It's my intention to be outside of your charge range. It's my intention that I be able to run to the zone. It's my intention to blah, 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 blah. You're not going to see an argument from me on the following turn if someone gets bumped or something. But as long as you put those thoughts and those intentions and those realities out loud, you make it a lot easier for everybody to get along. At least in my experience.
Yeah, so I remember when I was an up-and-coming War Machine player, and I played you at Capital City Bloodbath, I think it was.
We talked about MF Doom for 2 hours?
Yeah, we talked about MF Doom and Wu-Tang Clan for 2 hours before, while the round timer was going, and we were just singing songs and playing games. And it was a genuinely fun and enjoyable game.
Yeah.
And, like, that's what I come to expect from you. And, you know, not all players play like that, but I feel like if more people did, the community as a whole would improve.
I agree.
With that said, when you're playing locally or like even when you're at conventions, is there anything you keep an eye on what you're testing? Like any breakpoints in lists? Like how do you refine the magic in a list? Like when you're doing those practice games leading up to WTC, what are you watching for? What are you like really looking at?
I think what I'm looking for, I think I like to break lists down to basic components. I think I like to try and, so Makeda is a good example of this. I like to look at something as its individual moving parts, its individual tools, its individual components. So for example, I've been playing around a lot with not running brutes because maybe I don't need those shield guards because the component is shield. And then testing what it looks like without brutes. You know, the turtles are the gun platform that force engagements that blah, 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 blah. What happens if I don't run turtles? You know, I think there's a lot of value to just adding and subtracting, looking for problems, looking for shortcomings, trying to fill them, trying to see if they are shortcomings or if they're extraneous, and really just playing outside the box. I don't think there's wrong answers, I guess, is what I'm saying when it comes to testing. I think you can have a hypothesis, and the hypothesis could be, I'm going to get tabled. And if you're right, then you're right. And that's okay. You know, you don't find those innovative breakthroughs if you don't take chances. And I think that it's really important to take those chances, even if they look transparent. You know, Mortal 2 is a huge example of something like that, where it ended up being objectively the strongest part of my pairing last year. But on paper, Atlas looks like a dumpster fire. It doesn't even make sense when you read it, but it's really good. And there was no finding that without taking some weird chances in a lot of games.
Awesome. So what last question about you, and then we're going to move on to probably talk about OTC. Your local meta, local game store, do you want to give them a shout out? Where do you play and anybody we know in your meta?
Well, it's I own my local game store, so let's shout me out for sure. We can do that.
Awesome.
OMG Games and Collectibles. We do have an online store, your one-stop shop for all things Magic Gathering singles. We have a good store. We have David Beauchamp of Team One fame over the last course of years, and he's on Team Two with me this year. Guy's a robot. Some of the best theory machine I've ever experienced, honestly. Amazing player, and I think I really enjoy the attitude that my locals take towards War Machine. Because they play me and Dave so often, they're very much just about, like, what lessons can I take away from this game? Like, what will this game do to make me better? And I think when your community has that attitude towards games, I think you end up with just a stronger community day after day. Okay? So despite us being a small group, we're only like 6 or 8 players right now. I feel like even my middle of the pack regulars are like phenomenal opponents that like never make it easy. It's really fun. And it makes it really easy to feel like I'm practicing every time I play. It's really, really cool.
Very cool. So, once again, congratulations on winning. And like I said, sorry, you didn't qualify for the Invitational, but you did get a boatload of points. So hopefully you can continue on with your success. I think now we're going to transition into the Ontario Team Championship. I believe, Josh, you went on a team, correct?
I sure did. I took my team of locals I just said were really good.
And then, of course,
he did miserably.
Matt, you took it, or you went with a team from your local area.
Yeah, I went with my locals, Bim Bim Pro Play.
Awesome. And Brad, what team were you on?
We were on Thick Dick and the Marvelous Molly Whoppers.
Yeah.
Those guys are jicks.
So, yeah, guys, why don't, let's see. Let's go ahead and start with Matt. Why don't you talk about your OTC experience?
So we drove down Thursday night. So it was me, Matthew Charon, and Matthew Massey, the animal. We're in a car, drove down pretty late at night, got in around 10:30, got pretty drunk. It was pretty good time the night before. Friday we played in the Shark Tank. This was a War Machine Weekend points event, which means I got War Machine Weekend points and an IG qualifier. I had a really good time. I played five really great games and ended up coming in second. Went home with a little trophy. It was a really good event. I played one of my best buds in War Machine, Johnny John John Fares, and had one of the most fun and enjoyable games I've had of War Machine in a long time. That guy, we've played twice, and he's beat me both times. He dwells in the deepest recesses of my nightmares. he's a super cool dude. Does not like to be touched though, so that's a thing. It was a really good time. For those that don't know, John Henry won the Shark Tank, and Charles, the robot from the future, got third. My local Massey got fifth, I believe. Overall, really great event. Had a really good time. Our team went 4-2. We played four really good rounds. Lost a round that I felt like I got my team four green matchups and one yellow. And then lost to Bradley Park's team.
Oh boy. It was a really tough round.
Yeah, we had some upsets that round. I played against the thickest of dicks, Rich Owens. We had a really cool game. fun story. Brad showed me his matchup matrix before the round. And Rich Owens was like, I think this is a 6 out of 5 for me. And after that game, he was like, oh, no, never mind. It really wasn't.
Yeah, so not out of 5, definitely out of 10. Thought it was slightly advantage for him. But we, I don't think he's played against Tridents, at least not in multiple, and not a list like that. So a lot of learning on the fly.
I'm still going to go with 6 out of 5.
Okay, I mean, that's also reasonable.
Yeah. So the cool thing about that matchup was he ran his beast to the center of the table, and I just ran my army to his side of the table in his back arc, and was like, your turn, I guess, figure it out.
And then guess what? He did figure it out.
I mean, not really. I missed some things I needed to win.
Not really. Matt, real quick, who won that game, if you can remind me?
I mean,
he won,
that's true.
Oh, so maybe he figured it out then.
I mean, sure. I don't want to diminish his...
What do you mean, sure?
I don't want to diminish his win in any way. He played a very good game.
Kind of diminishing it, but...
I mean, I literally just said he played a good game.
I think what Matt's trying to say is that during that game, he did the coolest thing, and that's what matters.
I had the moral victory that game when I traded 4 CPs for 60 points of his army and then equalized points the following turn. And then missed 3 boosted 11s and a boosted 6 to win the game. I think that was the coolest thing.
Kind of sounds like a moral loss, doesn't it? Like, certainly.
You know what, Jeff? I'm only crying on the inside, all right? And now on the outside, now that you brought it up, all right? My feeling hurts. My hunger is hurt, all right? With that said, though, the event was really great. Big shout out to Scott and Fab and Agatha, who ran a truly great event. I've gone twice now, and I've truly enjoyed it both times I went. Again, another shout out to my locals. I was on their team last year, and we did really well. This year, we did really well as well, and really enjoyed the event. Enjoyed hanging out, seeing everyone. Really, nothing to complain about. Just overall, a great event.
On the topic of shoutouts to those organizers, can you name another War Machine event where the organizers bring free cookies for everyone? There were just cookies for everybody at the reporting table. There was caramel corn if you wanted it.
That's during during the night before, I was really hungry, and they just gave me a meal. They were just like, here, here's some pizza. I was like, well, you're just giving me food. They're like, yeah, that's what we do.
Like, the OTC rocks. That's super great.
Yeah, so one of the things I often talk about at conventions is the player experience. Like, even if you have a lot of shitty games, and, like, you get fucked, and, like, your asshole's raw from just, like, playing into things that you just don't enjoy, like, whatever, the convention can still be great because of the player experience. And OTC hits the player experience so perfectly. Like, you have food, you have water, you have Advil, you have whatever you need available at all times. Here's food, here's drinks. Oh, you need a second? Go take a second, whatever. No one gets a double DQ on round timer, is all I'm saying.
It's like if a War Machine tournament was ran by your grandma. Like, do you need a sandwich? We'll get you a sandwich right now. You know what I mean?
I mean,
it's wicked.
True. True. It's a great event. And like with how great it is, like, it's only growing every year, right? Like, it's only getting bigger. I'm a really big fan.
Yeah, I was super jealous that I didn't get to go, so I'm definitely gonna try to figure out how I can get there next year.
OTC is a fucking blast. I love it.
Get fact.
So, Josh, how'd your team do?
I don't really want to talk about it.
Okay.
Why are you bringing up traumas, man? I thought this was supposed to be a fun thing. We went 2-4, but we did have one bye. So I'm not going to do the math for you, but that's not great. Okay, so not doing great aside to our credit. We played really well. My team played exceptionally well. And I don't think we got swept one round. All of our rounds went down to really critical 2-3s. With game 5s, that could have gone either way. And then, like, little swings one way or another pushed it away from us. So win record aside, like, my guys played really hard and really well and did, like, I don't think we ever lost a game to something dumb. I think we always lost to good players who found small advantages and pushed them to wins. And that's a good feeling. Like, it's hard to be mad about doing bad like that, right?
Yeah, you definitely can't complain about that.
Correct. I mean, I did great. I went 0-1. But, like, my team did their best, goddammit.
That is one thing that I found interesting about the OTC is that there wasn't a lot of data. Like, ATC, they had all the data in the world. And, specifically with individual player performance matchups, how they even had data on who, what advantage you got going first on scenarios. Whereas OTC, it was literally just the team wins that I saw. Did I miss something or were they not keeping track of individual wins?
OTC kept track of the most important data. The most important data is that Canadians have won every event this year.
Oh! I thought you were going to bring up the pineapples on pizza thing, to be perfectly honest. But yeah, we want everything. Take that.
The most important data.
I have no response to that, other than I think we need to move the wall north.
they keep invading.
Yeah.
Gotta keep filthy Canadians out of your American events and their own events.
Just any event, really.
Just as a shout out, Alberta sent a team, Alberta Strong, with Gord Wepler, Bryn, Matt, a.k.a. Luigi, Corey Burns, a.k.a. Birdman, and Chris, Dan Cox, a.k.a. Handsome Chris. And they ended up taking home the OTC trophy. Great guys, great team, and it was really good to see them.
They killed it.
Yeah, they were the reason there was a 6th round as well. They were the 5th round pair down. So I was very excited when they won because I like playing this game.
Yeah, right? After my team lost, they're like, well, we want to go home. Like, no, motherfuckers. We're playing this fucking game. We are here to play War Machine, and yeah. I am playing War Machine.
And then you got us.
Yeah, dude, did you hear how excited I was? I yelled across the hall.
I think we both did.
I put on my Danny McGeehan jersey and was like, I'm playing Danny. Danny versus Danny.
You did not get Danny. Danny played next to you.
Yeah.
Although Danny true. Also still played Danny.
Danny did, in fact, play Danny. That's true.
One of the Bin Bin Pro players is actually named Danny Daigle, which is who Danny McGeehan played.
Yep. Really, really great round. I had a fucking great time at OTC. Fuck, that was fun.
Yeah. I went to, I think our team went to OTC. We only lost to other Americans. So we did that.
Hmm. Is that what's going on with Canada? Is that we're too busy infighting and we need to,
yeah, 100%
Canada? Okay, cool.
I blame Facebook.
The organizers set us up. Actually, our first two rounds were against Americans.
Yeah, did you vote the organizers in? Is that what happened there?
Hilarious. All right, so let's move on. I think we wanted to talk a little bit about CID as a whole, not specifically on Infernals, but on the process of CID, and specifically, Josh, your thoughts on it as a pretty good War Machine player.
Just before Josh starts, can I segue in a quick point real quick?
Yeah.
Yes. The important thing about CID and why I felt like this was an important topic, especially with Infernal CID starting and like being already updated, is that we as a community tend to lose sight of like the length of the game. Like, the game's been around for a long time, and we kind of lose perspective on how far we've come. And not only in like the game rules, but also like as a community and how we kind of treat other people and like how we interact with other things when they're stressful or upsetting us. And I think that it's very easy for us to be drawn to hyperbole and very easy for us to be drawn to kind of like the sensationalism that is like just the extremes. And Josh was talking to a group of WTC players Saturday, I believe. And he was making such a compelling argument. I was like, there's no way we're not going to have on this guy without him giving this information, because this was the most succinct and probably just the greatest summary of CID and like the longevity of the game I've heard anyone make. So without further ado, go ahead, Joshy.
Okay.
Josh.
Okay, I'm going to do my best to recreate this. So stay with me, because this one's long-winded. I'm remarkably sunny about not only War Machine, but the state of War Machine right now. And I think right now it's particularly easy to point at key points of the meta and go like, these things are, like, I think the scale of it is like, these things are too strong, to these things are ruining the game. And then you get an Infernal CID and a new set of like, these things are ruining the game. I don't know if I'm the only one hearing a lot of this, but I hear a lot of like, CID doesn't work. And I couldn't disagree more. I think this is the closest we've ever been to every faction being playable on a high level. I think this is the most diverse top of the food chain we've ever seen, from War Machine ever. And I think this is probably the healthiest we've ever seen in the game. And this opinion includes Iona, and it includes Makeda, and it includes all. So, like, for the first time in War Machine's history, I think at least, when you look at the S tier of the game, the very top of the game, you don't see an individual list. You don't see Haley 2 or Gatsby 2 or Haley 3 or Slayers or any of these individual concepts, Ghostly. You see two factions. That's wholly unique to right now. You know, if you go through the lists of what's competitively viable, it's like 14 factions or A tier or greater. It's just there are a few egregious little issues. Overtake, Lord of the Beast, etc., that feel like, that are, I guess, negative play experiences or whatnot. But outside of that, it's incredibly bold and incredibly dynamic. So if you look at the beginning of Mark III, you see what? You see two or three lists, Matt, that were like really big deals?
At the beginning of Mark III, you had what? Wormwood, Sloan, and like Haley 2?
Sloan. I don't know if Haley 2 was even there. So I think it was like Sloan and Wormwood. And yeah. Oh, and Lilith 3. And Lilith 3.
Yeah, yeah.
So what you have are that guns are too good, and an egregious control feat that happens to shut down guns. And that is like, the entire meta is defined by these factors. And it's a concept, and a concept that defeats the concept. That's very narrow. And then what happens next, right? Like is that the first CID that comes next?
Well, you had the first theme come out. That was Gravediggers, right?
That's right. Oh, no, the first themes were in... Gravediggers actually quite a bit later. So what you end up seeing is the first themes. You see Mercs, you see Winterguard Command.
Yep.
And you see Vlad Rockets, for example, come out. And now the meta has shifted, not towards new concepts or broader themes, but now instead of it being guns that are too good, and and Wormwood gets nerfed at this point as well. So instead of it being guns that are too good and a degenerate control feat that shuts down guns, now you just see like a different set of guns that are too good, the guns that have free points. But then you see CID cycles and themes release. You see the game broaden. You know, you start to see things. I think the first cycles were the original Scorn cycle, which is the faction that's supposed to be hard to shoot to death, gets a CID, and you start to see guns diminish. You see trolls get their CID, Band of Heroes becomes a thing, Magic 1 becomes a thing, and you further on see guns diminish. And throughout this, you're seeing these issues. You're seeing things like Una 2 come and go, seeing things like Ghost Fleet come and go. These degenerate interactions that are bad for the game. But the reality is that they're getting solved. And they may not get solved right away, but they get solved in time. They're paying attention, right? And as those solves come in and go, the meta continues to expand. The top tier of it continues to expand. What's viable and what's competitive and what's winning continues to expand. And that's incredible to me. It's incredible to me to see a game. I've played a lot of competitive games, from Magic to Smash Bros. To a bunch of this stuff. And you never see a game as its lifespan goes on become broader. You don't. And although right now you see a large gap or a potentially large gap between the S tier and the A plus tier, the S tier essentially being like Iona or Lord of the Feast, whichever one you want to focus on, and Makeda 3, and the A plus tier, despite that being such a bold gap, were that to tighten in, you may come to notice 10 factions plus are the best faction in the game. That's wild.
Yeah, so one of the really big things Josh touches on there is kind of like how over time the game only gets wider. And like, it used to be that people equated width with strength. So like, they'd be like, oh, you have to play this faction because it has these options. Like, if you remember back to Mark II, we had the opposite of width, right? Like, every faction was defined by only two casters. You could only play these two casters because they were the only casters with good theme forces. Like, you had to be playing...
If you told me in Mark II that you were playing Trolls, for example, I could go, cool, you're playing Runes of War and EE, and these are your lists. If you told me you were playing Legion, cool, you're playing, what, Lilith 2 and a Veil or a Twin. And these are your whole list. You could hide your list, and I could make my list selection, and it wouldn't matter. If I tell you now that I'm playing... If I tell you now that I'm playing Immortals, like Exalted, there are four or five casters I could be playing. There are three or four different builds of the list I could be playing. You have no clue what it is from that level on.
And like, that's a huge thing, especially from a competitive perspective. In games like Smash, the S tier of the game only becomes more refined and rigid as the game goes on. And the gap between the S tier and the A tier in terms of win percentage and success rates only grow wider as well. As players get better at playing S tier characters. And like, you can have the technical skills and expertise on something below an S tier to succeed. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that in most games, you see that gap becomes so wide that you don't really get to fit. They don't rein it back in most of the time. And what we see over the longevity of Privateer Press and War Machine and Hordes is that they rein things in within a pretty reasonable amount of time.
I think a really interesting expansion on that idea, like beyond the idea that Smash, you only see the S tier become more defined and more rigid. I think it's every game ever that's true. I think every game ever from Magic, if you let a format exist long enough, you will exclusively have one top tier idea. I think if you look at anything that isn't War Machine, any new release will either invalidate the other highest potential or be irrelevant. I think the longer we look at the history of War Machine, I think the more diverse it becomes. And I think that that's wholly unique from a game that is capable of being played competitively.
And I think that Josh really hits this nail on the head. And this is why I'm so positive about the game, why Josh is so positive, is that we understand that in the scope of the game, something that's too strong or too weak or on any extreme is very visible to everyone and gets fixed. If you remember back, everyone was complaining about Halo 3 Gravediggers being the most egregious thing in the game. And like they didn't even adjust it. It didn't see any nerfs. But like, it's not tearing up the meta anymore because the meta got to every faction gained tools for the matchup. It wasn't long ago that we were talking about Protectorate of Menoth's High Reclaim Rejudicator being the most egregious thing. It's going to break the game. It's too strong. But like, where is it now? Like, we're not bothered by it anymore. Sure, maybe you need to have solves for it, but it's not defining the tools you have anymore. Look at Krix. Gaspy 3 was the big boogeyman. He needs to be nerfed. Slayers need to go up to 12 points, whatever. They need to lose Carapace. Like, no changes. And where's Gaspy 3 now? So when you look at the longevity of the game, when you look over the course of the game, it's very easy to see how these things get adjusted.
So
what I think is extra interesting about that, too, is like, sure, I cannot remember the last time I dealt with 9 Slayers. 9 Slayers are still good. Like, sure, I don't remember the last time I had to deal with Halo 3. Halo 3 is still really good. As these new printings come out and these new lists and the meta develops, these things that used to drive the meta aren't erased. They just take a backseat. You can still play it and succeed. It's still a B+ at worst. But it's still present and viable. You aren't seeing an example of Codex Creed. Or some weird arms race where the new thing is constantly replacing the old one. What's defining things are changing, and that's changing the value of your tools. But those tools are still good, and they still have a place in a pairing, as long as you're also acknowledging what they no longer bring to the table. Or what they no longer sell. Like, everything's still good that was good 2 years ago. It just may not be the definitive point of what we're doing.
Well, and I think you hit a very valid point, is that having tools for the current meta is the most important thing. So like, the reason some things don't have the longevity is because their tools aren't as relevant now as they were when they were popular. And as metas evolve, like with PT completely shifting the entire meta, and everyone's like, I need to play mortality and guns. Same thing with Tharn. I need to play mortality and guns. You need those tools. So you get rid of other tools in place of those.
I like to call that Butcher 3 syndrome. When on Butcher 3's release, there was a collective of people who decided that War Machine was now dead. Like, Butcher 3 is crazy and should never exist. What is anyone thinking? How is anyone ever supposed to beat this? And then like a month passed and everyone was like, oh, I just have to build my list a little bit differently because he's in the room now. And it's okay if things change. Like, everything that redefines the way you look at the game isn't breaking it, it's advancing it.
But
and that should be exciting so, if something changes.
So to play devil's advocate, let's say you can only play one faction, right, because of finances. I'm just going to pick Signar because you brought up Halo 3. And let's say on a good week, you can get in 3 games a week. One of the major things that people talk about is how abruptly Signar's power has shifted, and they're all hoping for CID. What is somebody that is in that boat where, okay, I'm trying to make the best of what I can do with Signar, and I have to be able to answer Scorn, I have to be able to answer Tharn. How do you talk directly to them where, you know, you let them know that everything is going to be okay and that they should, you know, continue to play the game?
I actually addressed exactly this recently with a local. So the context I had with my local is Signar players are a little bit mopey right now because of the state of their faction. That being said, I don't think the faction's unplayable. I think it's facing boundaries or restrictions it hasn't seen previously. Like, it's not as format defining as it has traditionally been. And particularly with my local, who's like, his complaint is, I don't have a single list in Signar that reaches out and touches you. I don't have a list that I can grab control of the table, be on objectives in meaningful ways, scenarios in meaningful ways, and not just like lose everything. How do I just stand in my deployment zone and shoot you and not have you counter five? And I'm not a Signar player, but my knee-jerk reaction is like Striker 1 double Storm Lances because they're armor a billion and can kill Titans. They're cavalry charges, so they get around like defenses, like score models and that sort of thing. And they have rational threats. Like they can really actually threaten Thurn and stuff. There's an opportunity for them to survive a turn. It's not perfect, but it's cool. And that player, whether or not I'm right, and I don't think I'm right, I don't know if I'm right, that player had just never considered the possibility that something so outside of what's accepted as good could potentially work. And he was kind of like, geez, maybe I should try that. If you're a player playing a faction that is traditionally more powerful than you're currently accustomed to because of the shift in the meta, and you're trying to figure out what you need to do to be relevant in the meta that currently exists, try the tools you've been neglecting. Try a bottom-up approach. The reality is that whether or not they're perfect tools, there are tools that exist. Storm Knights kill things. They do. They're really good at it. Sword Knights, sorry. Like, you have stuff, and it's a lot of stuff that isn't traditionally explored because it isn't traditionally good. And I think when it comes to playing that sort of game, it's really valuable to try and play outside the box a little bit.
So I think a large part of what Josh is hitting on here is why I ended up playing Denny 2 last year for WTC. At the beginning of the year, we were aware Gatsby 3 was the best thing in Crix, in terms of like the most oppressive list. And Josh was like, you should really be testing Gatsby 3. And I was like, all right, I'm going to test it. He's like, but also play stuff that interests you and find off meta solutions to problems and like explore areas you don't want to, you know, explore areas you don't expect other people to explore. So I did. I played every caster in every possible list I could imagine. And I ended up on a Denny 2 list that just killed people and like just it was really hard to play around, and I won tons of shit with it. But like I never would have ended up on that list if I was only playing what people considered strong. And I think that that's a really big thing in War Machine, that a lot of people, especially the people who only get 3 games a week, they're afraid for those 3 games a week to be losses. Like, a lot of people have this like metric in their head where they're like, I need to win something so that I can prove that I'm advancing as a player, so that I can improve the time I'm investing has worth. But like highlight guys, you don't actually need to win any games of War Machine to advance. You can lose 500 games. It doesn't matter. What matters is at the end of the day, like when you look at how you played, if you're happy with how you played, if you can accept a lesson from it. And like, a lot of Signar players are stuck in this rut where they've only been playing, you know, I only play Haley 3, I only play Siege 1, I only play Sloan. And they find themselves in this situation where they're like, well, my Haley 3, Siege 1 pairing has 3 dodges. And those 3 dodges tend to be meta lists that are things right now. And instead of learning another list or like experimenting and finding something off meta to explore with, they hit their head on a wall into the bad matchups and go, well, this sucks. I have no other options. And it's like, you have lots of options. You have lots of things you can do.
You never lose. You either win or you learn. And like, the metric of your, like Matt's saying, your value as a player, your objective quality as a player is not defined by your win-loss ratio. If that's like your ego is, if you need that to be a huge one-sided nonsense number. But like, when you're learning a list that's difficult, you should anticipate taking a large number of losses. And I think we touched earlier about reaching out to your community and like taking their lessons in and working with them and hearing how their games went. I think if you have a limited number of games you get to play every month, I think that is doubly important because you can't afford to test. I'll tell you right now, one of my favorite things in life, was when Matt was playing Scorn, because I'll tell you, man, Matt plays a million more games than I do. And that meant I got to skip testing a bunch of casters because Matt got to tell me how those casters work. If you are of a limited number of games and a limited number of opportunities to play, reach out to players that play a lot. Because you know what? Players that play a lot want to talk about the game a lot. You can be like, hey, why don't you play Connie B? hey, have you played Striker 1 Double Horses? Is it good? Hey, like, what has your experience been? And you can learn their lessons without taking their games. You can gain a lot from someone else's work, especially if you don't have a lot of opportunity to do the work yourself.
Your statement of you either win or you learn, like, giant spotlight on me. Like, that hit so fucking hard into me. Like, that's some amazing wisdom you just passed on.
Totally stole it from somebody else. And I'm trying to Google who, but I don't know. I read it in books, so now I'm smart. But.
Yep. Doesn't matter. It's
worth it. It's something to keep, right? Like, it's really important if you're trying to develop in any way, War Machine, your career, anywhere. Losses are the most valuable thing you'll experience in your life. You should learn to love losing.
For reference, it seems to be a Nelson Mandela quote.
Perfect. Sure.
So this is a really big thing that WTC taught me, and that being a member of my local community has kind of highlighted for me recently, that players just lock themselves in. It's hard to see outside of your little box. Like, we exist in a period of time in War Machine where even the top factions have dodges.
Mm-hmm.
Like, does that make sense? Yes. Like you're like, oh, I'm the strongest quote unquote faction in the game. And then you're like, oh, well, what do you have a hard time into? And they give you like this laundry list of lists. And they're like, well, I don't just auto win any matchups anymore. And I have to play a lot of hard games. And it's like the gap between that and the gap between like, oh, I'm playing Signar and I have like some awkward matchups is very small. Like, it just, I don't know, man. I think that we are our own worst enemies in terms of how we perceive things. And it's a lot easier to blame an external factor than it is to just be like, well, maybe it was these 11 mistakes I made during the game rather than my faction's invalid and I hate everything.
Yeah. Just as a quick reference to that, in Mark II, as someone who played almost exclusively Runes of War, I believe this is true, and if anyone hears this and they're like, no, you're wrong, it was me who beat you, please call me out. But I believe I never lost one tournament game to Legion with Runes of War in like 5 years. Because the matchup was that egregious. I beat players significantly better than me because the matchup was that egregious. My current dodge as a Scorn player, the top, blah, 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 my current dodge is players that are better than me. Like, if I want to win the game, I have to make sure that I'm not playing people that are better than me. Because everyone has tools. I played a troll player at, this is an anecdote, and it doesn't really go anywhere, but stay with me. I played a troll player at the OTC, who's like, trolls are a lot of people's bottom three factions right now. And there was a point in that game where I was like, I don't know what to do about this. This is just a bunch of numbers that like don't really correlate with my OP-ness that I think I'm supposed to like beat automatically because I'm so good, I guess. Like, this is really hard. And like, the reality is he just played really well and it made it for a really challenging game for me. Like, that's the state of War Machine. You're sure, Lord of the Feast is probably too good. I'm not going to argue with you. We should probably change Overtake to Sidestep on Makeda. It solves the like nonsense part of it. Like the Makeda part of it. Or sorry, the Magic 1 part of it is what I'm trying to say. Fine. Like, those are small issues. They're not Una 2. They're not Ghost Fleet. They're just things that are a little bad for the game. And they're fixable. And PP pays attention. PP pays so much attention to what we think and feel about this game that when we renamed the Facebook discussion group Lord of the Feast General Discussing, they started shitposting about Lord of the Feast in it with us. Like Chad of the Feast and stuff. That's a really intimate connection. And to bring this full circle to the idea of CID working or not working, the reality of this game or any game is that their internal playtest group does not equate to all of us playtesting. Their internal playtest group has a limited amount of time to playtest these things, which we don't. We have next to unlimited time. We love this game. We played a ton. Throughout the course and like the future of War Machine, Ghost Fleets are probably going to happen because it even took us time to find it. And that doesn't mean the game's dead. It doesn't mean the game's in a bad place or the developers don't know what they're doing or that nothing's getting fixed and now we should flush all our models down the toilet. It means that we need to participate in the system and give our feedback and give it enough time to be taken seriously so that it can be fixed like everything that has ever happened that was too good ever before. I'm so comfortable with that.
No, I like it. I like it a lot. So I think we're going to touch on one more topic before we close out. I got a message from somebody who was local to us and then moved away to Madison, Wisconsin. I guess he's going to go try and be a lawyer. His name is Jake. And he's been relaying to me how his progression as a player has been. And so he's been, just grinding games and getting progressively better with it. And he recently placed in the top three of a Steamroller. But what he has relayed to me is he goes to a Steamroller probably two weeks out of three. And he's playing, up to five games a week, but it's dogging him down. And, he wants to know, like, where do you go from there? He doesn't want to waste the skill that he's getting, but grinding out these games are just really hitting him hard. So, with two WTC players on here, and I know Brad gets a lot of games and I get a lot of games. I just want to talk about burnout and how do we address it? And, what do we do? How do we help Jake?
Can I answer that one first? I'm happy to answer that one.
Yeah, go ahead.
So at least for me, I think Matt plays more than me. I'm not sure about you, Josh, but whenever I get bored of my list pair, frustrated with the list I'm playing, I'll break out some fucking wacky shit of models I haven't put on the table for months, just not looked at, maybe even years, and then kind of take things from that game, interactions I enjoyed, and try to recreate them either with that list or maybe with a different caster, or use that same caster in a different theme to see if I can kind of get the same feeling. And that's how I land on new list pairs is I'll play a list pair kind of into the ground, figure out something new to try, just usually something really off the wall, and then try and take things away from that to put into an actual list pair for the future.
I just play a lot of games, and I make sure to stop playing when I'm not having fun. I think that's kind of the thing. I just got back from OTC, and I went to a game night, and then had people over at my place to play. And I just sat out a game. I was like, I don't have it in me to play another game today. Last year I grinded really hard, 527 games.
God, so hard.
Yeah, it was pretty bad, and I definitely burnt out really hard. I hit a wall. I hit a wall about after Lock and Load, where I just stopped enjoying playing the game for a solid month. But I was I'm 300 games in, and I just can't do it anymore. So I took 2 weeks off. In fact, I was I messaged Josh, and I was Josh, I know you're going to be disappointed in me as a player or whatever, but I need some time off, or I need to play dumb shit. I need to do something that isn't just grinding WTC lists, and to just unburn myself. And Josh was dude,
do it right now.
Yeah.
Please.
Josh was not even a second later. He's just do whatever the fuck you need. Fix your shit.
Okay. As an aside, I remember at the beginning of that process, because this was my first year as captain, and I was I'm going to do this. I'm going to shine. I'm going to be the captain that they need. I'm going to do all these things. And I'm going to lead by example, and I'm going to play twice as many games as anyone else plays. And I had this big, how I was going to peer pressure all my friends into constantly playing with me, and how I was going to dominate their personal life. And the end of, I think it was the second week, when Matt was I've been taking drugs to stay up so that I can play 40 games a day. And I've been playing two games at once, and just going off the deep end. I was fuck it. I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. That's too many games for me to possibly do the thing I wanted to do. He wins. You win, Matt. Okay. I'm not doing it anymore. It was too many games. Don't do that. Frankly, the answer Matt gave was the answer I was kind of afraid to give out loud. When I'm not having fun with War Machine, I'll make, if I see myself approaching not liking the game, I don't wait till I'm fuck, I'm burned out. I wait till I'm if I play anymore, I may burn out. I'll make sure I take a break. The thing is, if even any time you're developing anything, if you aren't taking the rest time that you need to soak those things in or to like recover so you can get back to your next set of reps, you're not going to get in everything that you need to get in. So like the secret war machine, like admittedly, I've never seen a game that favors reps, like that benefits you for playing a lot as much as this game does. But like those reps lose value if they aren't, if you're dissident during them, right? So take breaks. When I'm burned out, I'll go and play Smash with my friends, or I'll do something to maintain my like work-life war machine balance. And you just have to make sure that you're caring for yourself. You can play wacky shit. If you have two factions, it's really fun. Like, I was experiencing some burnout, and I went and played Judicators for a little while, and was like, this is why I play Scorn, and it really made me happy to go back to Scorn. Or like, you know, you probably have other hobbies and interests. You probably have other people in your lives. You can see. Take enough time away that you want it the way that you wanted it when you started. Like, be hungry for it again when you go back.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely really good advice. I look at my enjoyment of this game is a three-legged stool. And what I get out of it is hobby. There's the strategy and the gameplay, and then there's the camaraderie. The hobby aspect, I'm going to paint models. That's what I do. So that's never going to really go away. Although it is, I can't experience burnout in that area. I made the mistake of painting our Scorn orange, and that color scheme sucks. It's soul draining. And Trish is always like, paint this new thing for me. So that's
paint the Supreme Guardian again.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know who else is Scorn is orange, Pete?
Who's that?
Mr. Josh Bates.
Ooh.
Mine is very orange, but I paid a guy to paint mine orange. If you're in the Ontario area, please don't hesitate to message me. He's a great commission painter. But I was like, I want an orange because orange is my favorite color. And like a week into painting it, he was like, I want you to know, I'm never painting anything orange ever again.
Yeah, it's,
and it's your fault.
It's soul crushing.
You got to layer it so bad.
Yeah. The third part is a camaraderie. Obviously, you know, being on a podcast, I love talking to you guys. I love talking to people about the game. I'm very fortunate in that two of my regular gaming opponents are my wife and my son. So I really get to, you know, enjoy that part of it. But the grind can affect that relationship pretty hard. If you're not, you know, if we've definitely had times where, you know, constantly just we have this hierarchy of a meta where it fluctuates on who's actually winning all the time. And that can be hard on the relationship. And so I guess really the thing we look at is, okay, what are we really getting out of this game experience right now? Are we enjoying it? Are we learning anything from it, or are we just going through the motions and could we be doing something else? And so that's really what it comes down to is, am I enjoying the three aspects of this hobby?
So for me, War Machine, like the WTC for me is my Olympics. Like it really is. It's my opportunity to be the best at something in the world. And it's rare that you get the opportunity to do that with friends. Like I get to go and travel with friends and be the best in the world at something potentially with friends. There's an enormous amount of personal significance to this game. That being said, at the end of the day, I'm a 30-year-old man playing with little painted dollies. And if I'm not taking any joy in that, then it's time to like give it enough space that I do find the joy. Because if it is that important to you and it's that joyless to you, then you're chasing the dragon. Like you have to stop until you love it again and maintain that balance in your life.
You got to go through the withdrawal shakes.
Well, yeah, like go to the clinic where they give you the shot of blood card.
We need a war machine methadone clinic.
So
I think I know some guys that can help us out.
Awesome.
So I think Josh really hit on a really important point here. is that, like, a lot of the time what happens in this game, it happens in the community, is that people hold on with, like, bitter hatred. Like, they're not enjoying the game anymore, and they're not having fun, and they just want other people to not be having fun either. Like, they want their misery to be your misery. Instead of just, like, taking a step back and, like, letting them, like, regenerate that positive energy that lets them, like, be a member of the community that's passionate and enjoyable to be around. Like, I know locally we have a few players who for the last, I don't know, 2 years have played at most a game a month. And every time I talk to them, they're relentlessly negative. They're just like, no matter what the situation is, it's just like, this sucks, fuck this, everything sucks, the fucking sky is falling. And it's like, dude, you're obviously not having fun. You're not even playing the fucking game. I think it's time you hang it up, bud, and just, like, move on with your fucking life. Like, if something that you used to love becomes something that you hate, you need to break up with it. And, like, that's just what you need to do. You need to move on. And, like, if you're playing the game and you're enjoying it and you're having a good time and you're like, man, I'm really burnt out, take a fucking break. But, like, let yourself regenerate, because you don't learn anything when you're fucking miserable. All you think about when you're miserable is how miserable you are.
So I've definitely, I know I've been at points where I'm like, I'm just tired of, I'm physically tired of playing games. So what I'll do is help TOs run events. And that gives you that outside view to look into games. And you can walk around and focus on what people are playing, but you're not invested in the game at all. And you start to learn stuff by watching the games, and you're helping out the local community. So, you know, so that's one avenue you could take a look at.
Yeah, totally. I think there's a lot to gain from. I think there's lots of different ways to get better at anything, and I think any way that you're absorbing parts of it are going to inherently make you better at it. So, like, Tim Bahnke is a huge example of this, where although he played very actively for a grand number of years, he absorbed a ton of theory, experience, conceptual values about War Machine from being, like, the iconic judge for God knows how long. Like, that player's ability is in part due to not playing. It goes right back to the whole idea of engaging your local community. You can do that on Messenger. You can do that as a judge. You can do that as a tournament member. You can do that in any which way. And I think oftentimes when you're experiencing that burnout, part of where you, like, force yourself to play games is you want to see your friends. More one way to do it. Even if, like, your objective is to grow as a player, you can grow as a player and see your friend. Like, you have your cake and eat it too, right? Like, you can do all of these things. Host a steamroller at your dad's house in his basement, because it's a big basement, for, like, 20 of your friends. John Henry, it's the best event of the year. And, like, just be there as a part of the community and gain from it. It's awesome.
Well, Josh, if you're free.
But just be critical and serious about
We run events called Drunk Machine, where we play in Mark Howard's driveway. So in the spring, if you want to come down, you let us know.
As long as you're cool with me drinking root beer, I am there. You have me at playing in the driveway. Like, honk if you're feeding is a sign I want to bring.
So far, it's you, me, and Corey Doyle that are being expedited to this event.
So no pants allowed.
Yeah,
on it.
Pretty hype. But I just want to highlight one more thing for those of you that go to conventions. So at conventions, the number one thing I do is say hi to my friends. Josh can attest to this. There's Brad too, Pete too, like. Pretty much everyone here knows that, like, when I'm at a convention, I spend most of my time just saying the dumbest shit to my good friends.
Awesome.
It's a lot of fun.
You walk up to me and you fuck off.
That's true. Yeah. But, like, another thing that will happen is, like, at War Machine Weekend's a good example. I was playing an event and I got, like, really frustrated with the game. I was like, man, dice just don't work the way I want them to. I'm making mistakes. I was just not enjoying myself. So I dropped from the event. I did the classic 3-0 drop. And I was like, I'm just going to go upstairs and sleep. Because there was no reason to keep playing. Like, I just wasn't enjoying myself in that moment. So I just went upstairs and got more booze and didn't sleep, which was good.
And that takes an enormous amount of conviction.
Like,
that's hard to do.
I don't know. I think it's pretty easy when you're not having fun to stop doing what's not causing you to have
fun. I think if you're not having fun but you're succeeding, a lot of people have a difficult time making that choice. And I think it's admirable if you can make that choice.
I mean, like, I'm blushing right now, but...
No, it's definitely... It is definitely a conscious decision. You know, especially it's always that difficult time when you're X and one and you're like, oh, I could come in second or I could come in third. So I guess I need to keep grinding this out. And why? Like, you know, call it a day, go home, you know, and there's always a next event.
If you're referring to the way that you spend your free time as grinding it out, you may want to take an objective look at the way that you like when I'm X and one in a tournament, I'm having fun. And when I'm X and one in a tournament and I'm not having fun, I'm not in the tournament anymore.
Yep.
Like be fair to yourself, be kind to yourself, even if you have high expectations of your skill set. Like you learn, like Matt said, you learn so much less, if anything at all, when you're just focusing on how negative you feel.
What happens a lot of the time as you get better at War Machine and like better at everything is you build these like imaginary expectations of yourself. So I'm a victim of this in some part. So like in my own head, like what ends up happening is like you're like, oh, I'm getting better at this game. These are the results I should be getting. And like you this happens a lot with top end players where they feel like anything short of winning is failure.
Yes.
And like it's the worst. You need to be in a headspace where you're able to move on and like have fun again.
Keep sight of what you're doing is playing a game. Like, again, this is a demonetized game. What we're doing is for fun. Make sure that you're having fun, developing your skills in a way that's good for you and is constructive both in terms of who you want to be and how you want to spend your time. Like, enjoy yourself. Enjoy it, beginning to end.
Perfect. Perfect. So, let's see. Next event we have coming up, I guess a big one is Adepticon. Mr. Bates, are you going to be there?
When? I don't know when that is.
But last weekend maybe, of this month.
I'm a solid maybe. I hope so.
I'm going to be there, Josh.
I'm going to say I'm a 60%.
Josh, if you can go, I'm a 60%. Sleep in my lap.
I was going to say I call small spoon, but I guess that's inferred on sleeping in your lap. So yeah, okay, 89%. Well, I guess I'm a 69.
Nice. And then obviously Sue, we're bringing a pretty big contingent for the greater Philadelphia, New Jersey area. So we hope to definitely see you there.
You will.
Perfect. All right, I think we're going to call that an episode, boys. For Fully Boosted, this has been Pete.
I'm still Brad.
Hi, I'm Matt.
I'm also Matt McCoy.
Oh, hi, Matt.
Thanks for listening.
I heard you're both handsome and charming.
I heard I have world's largest micropenis.